For over 50 years, residents of Clifton, Virginia have reported the same impossible encounter. A white figure appears without warning along the wooded roads of Fairfax County, sometimes carrying an axe, sometimes moving on all fours. The sightings follow a pattern that defies explanation. Multiple witnesses describe identical details despite never speaking to each other. Police reports from October 1970 document the first official encounters when Air Force Cadet Robert Bennett and security guard Paul Phillips each faced this figure within days of each other. The figure has been seen by children and adults, skeptics and believers alike. Yet despite decades of investigations, no one has ever captured definitive proof of what moves through these Virginia woods. The dispatcher at the Fairfax County Police Department had heard strange calls before, but nothing quite like the reports coming in during October 1970. Officers found themselves writing down details that seemed to belong in a horror movie rather than an official police report. A man in a white suit with rabbit-like ears carrying an axe had threatened people near Guinea Road. Multiple callers described the same impossible scene, yet none of them knew each other. Air Force Cadet Robert Bennett and his fiancée were parked along Guinea Road on the evening of October 19, 1970, when their quiet moment turned into something far more sinister. The couple had chosen a secluded spot near the woods, away from the main traffic routes that had connected the growing suburbs of Northern Virginia. Bennett later described hearing rustling in the trees before a white figure emerged from the darkness. The man stood upright and moved with an unsettling gait, wearing what appeared to be a white suit with a head covering that resembled bunny ears. The figure approached their car without hesitation, as if it had been watching them for some time. Bennett spoke of the man wielding a hatchet with practiced ease. The metal tool caught in the moonlight as the figure raised it above its head. Without warning, it brought the axe down hard against the passenger side window. Glass exploded inward, covering Bennett's fiancée with sharp fragments. The sound echoed through the quiet woods like a gunshot. The figure then leaned close to the broken window and spoke in a clear, threatening voice. Bennett reported that the man shouted, "You're on private property and I have your tag number." Bennett described the voice as distinctly human but carried an edge of authority that suggested the speaker knew these woods intimately. The man seemed completely comfortable in the darkness, moving with confidence through terrain that would challenge most people even in daylight. After delivering its warning, the figure stepped back from the car and melted into the tree line. Bennett started the engine and drove away as quickly as the narrow road would allow. The couple reported the incident to the police the following morning, though they admitted feeling foolish about the details they had to provide. Construction security guard Paul Phillips encountered the same white figure 10 days later on October 29, 1970. But his experience unfolded in a different setting that made the encounter even more puzzling. Phillips was inspecting a house under construction at 5307 Guinea Road when he noticed someone moving near the building's frame. Phillips approached thinking he had caught a vandal or trespasser, but what he found defied his expectations. The figure wore the same white suit and rabbit-like head covering that Bennett had described. It stood near the wooden frame of the house, methodically chopping at the support beams with an axe. Phillips spoke of watching the man work with disturbing efficiency, as if he knew exactly which cut would cause the most structural damage. The sound of metal biting into the wood carried clearly through the still night air. When the figure noticed Phillips watching, it stopped its work and turned to face him directly. Phillips described feeling an immediate sense of danger that made him step backwards towards his vehicle. Phillips reported that the man had threatened him, saying something to the effect of warning him about trespassing and threatening violence if he came closer. The man was described as being about 5 feet 8 inches tall and weighing approximately 175 pounds. Phillips spoke of the figure's movements as fluid and purposeful, suggesting someone who had spent considerable time in these woods. After several tense moments, the man gathered his axe and disappeared into the forest with the same silent efficiency he had displayed while working. Phillips found fresh axe marks cut deep into several support beams, damage that would require repair before construction could continue. Police officers who responded to both reports found themselves in an unusual position. The witnesses appeared to be credible and sober, with no apparent motive for fabricating such bizarre stories. Bennett held a responsible position as an Air Force cadet, while Phillips was a respected member of the local construction community. Neither man knew the other, yet their descriptions matched in every significant detail. The physical evidence supported both witnesses in ways that hoax explanations could not easily dismiss. Bennett's car showed fresh damage to the passenger window, with glass fragments still embedded in the doorframe. Phillips' construction site bore clear axe marks in the wooden beams, cuts that required considerable force and skill to execute. Police examined the hatchet from Bennett's encounter and later returned it after their investigation, though the case remained open with no immediate leads. These official reports from October 1970 established a template that would repeat throughout the following decades. The white figure would appear near construction sites, housing developments, and parked cars, always carrying the same axe and delivering the same territorial warnings. Each encounter followed the same pattern of brief confrontation followed by disappearance into dense forests where pursuit became impossible. But one location would soon emerge as the focal point for these mysterious encounters. The Colchester Overpass became something far more than a simple railroad bridge after those first encounters in 1970. Built around 1906 near the historic site of Sangster Station, this concrete and steel structure carried trains over a quiet country road that connected scattered rural communities throughout Fairfax County. By the 1970s, the area around the overpass had transformed from active farmland into dense second-growth forest, creating an isolated pocket of wilderness that seemed forgotten by the suburban development spreading throughout Northern Virginia. The bridge's location created perfect conditions for the unexplained encounters that would follow. Dense woods pressed close to both sides of the narrow road, while the forest canopy grew so thick overhead that drivers often found themselves in near-complete darkness as they passed underneath the overpass. Ancient oak and maple trees formed a natural barrier between the bridge and the nearest houses, which sat nearly a quarter of a mile away through the winding forest paths. This isolation meant that sounds from the bridge rarely reached neighboring properties, while any noise made near the structure would echo and amplify in ways that could disorient visitors. Multiple witnesses began reporting encounters with the white figure specifically at this location throughout the 1970s and beyond. Unlike the original sightings that occurred along various roads throughout the county, these encounters centered on the bridge itself and the immediate surrounding area. Drivers spoke of seeing the figure standing motionless on the overpass as they approached, only to find nothing there when they passed directly underneath. Others described glimpsing white movement in their peripheral vision as they crossed beneath the bridge, movement that seemed to track their vehicles from above. The consistency of these reports, spanning different seasons and times of night, suggested that something had chosen this particular location as a regular hunting ground or observation post. Local teenagers discovered the bridge during the late 1970s and early 1980s, turning visits to the overpass into tests of courage that became embedded into the social fabric of area high schools. Groups would drive out on weekend nights, challenging each other to face whatever waited in the darkness. Many of these teenage visitors reported experiences that went beyond simple pranks or imagination. Some spoke of hearing footsteps on the bridge above them when no one else was present, heavy boots that moved with deliberate purpose from one end of the structure to the other. Others described finding freshly broken branches arranged in patterns around the base of the bridge supports, arrangements that suggested intelligent design rather than natural occurrence. The physical layout of the Colchester Overpass created numerous opportunities for concealment and surprise. The bridge's concrete supports formed deep recesses where someone could hide completely from view, even during daylight hours. These alcoves extended several feet into the structure, creating shadowed spaces that remained invisible to anyone passing on the road above or below. The surrounding forest provided additional cover, with game trails and deer paths creating a network of hidden routes that allowed movement through the woods without detection. The elevation changes around the bridge meant that someone familiar with the terrain could approach from multiple directions while remaining completely hidden from anyone near the road. Strange sounds became a regular feature of nighttime visits to the overpass. Witnesses spoke of hearing metal striking concrete echoing from beneath the structure, sharp impacts that reverberated through the supports and seemed to come from multiple directions at once. The rhythm of these sounds suggested deliberate action rather than random noises, as if someone was systematically striking the bridge supports with a tool or weapon. One visitor described hearing what sounded like heavy boots echoing through the concrete chambers beneath the overpass, footsteps that would stop immediately when flashlights were directed towards their source. The acoustic properties of the concrete structure amplified these noises in ways that made determining their exact origin nearly impossible. The bridge's proximity to both residential neighborhoods and deep wilderness created an unusual environment that seemed to attract unexplained activity. Houses sat within a half mile of the overpass, close enough that residents occasionally reported seeing lights moving through the woods at night, yet far enough away that the forest between provided complete privacy for whatever occurred near the bridge itself. The surrounding woods connected larger tracts of undeveloped land that stretched for miles, creating corridors of wilderness that would conceal movement between the bridge and more remote areas. Even investigators who approached the Colchester Overpass with complete skepticism found themselves unsettled by the location after spending time there during the nighttime hours. The combination of isolation, acoustic effects, and the weight of accumulated stories created an atmosphere that affected even the most rational minds. Many spoke of feeling watched while examining the bridge area, as if unseen eyes were tracking their movements from the surrounding darkness. Yet these early reports from the overpass represented only the beginning of a much larger pattern of encounters that would span decades. The 1980s brought fresh sightings from families moving into newly developed neighborhoods along the edges of Fairfax County's remaining forests. Children walking home from school spoke of seeing a white figure watching them from tree lines that bordered their suburban streets. Parents initially dismissed these accounts as overactive imaginations, until they began hearing similar stories from other families who lived miles away and had no contact with each other. By 1973, the legend had already begun transforming beyond simple incident reports. Student Patricia Johnson collected 54 variations of the story for the Maryland Folklore Archive, documenting how the core details remained consistent even as the tale spread through different communities. Her research revealed that despite mutations and embellishments that naturally occur with oral tradition, witnesses continued describing the same white suit, rabbit-like head covering, and territorial warnings with remarkable consistency. Teenage couples continued to report incidents throughout the 1980s and 1990s, often while parked in secluded areas that had become popular meeting spots. These young witnesses described encounters following the same basic pattern established by Robert Bennett years earlier. The figure would emerge from wooded areas, approach their vehicles with an axe or a hatchet, and warn them about trespassing before disappearing back into the forest. Many of these teenagers had never heard of the original 1970s incidents, making their consistent descriptions all the more remarkable. Their accounts included details about the figure's white suit, the rabbit-like head covering, and the authoritative tone of voice that suggested someone defending their territory they knew intimately. A family camping at Burke Lake Park in 1987 experienced an encounter that expanded the geographic range of reported sightings beyond the original Colchester area. The father spoke of walking in the middle of the night to find a white figure standing at the edge of their campsite, just beyond the range of their dying campfire. The figure held what appeared to be an axe and remained motionless for several minutes before backing slowly into the surrounding woods. The family had chosen their campsite specifically because it offered privacy and isolation, surrounded by dense forests that connected the larger wilderness throughout the county. Their encounter demonstrated that the phenomenon was not limited to roads and construction sites, but could occur anywhere that human activity intersected with forested land. Construction workers building new housing developments throughout Fairfax County during the 1990s reported their own series of encounters. These witnesses were adults with steady employment and reputations in the community, making their accounts difficult to dismiss. A foreman supervising the construction of a subdivision near Burke spoke of finding fresh axe marks and wooden support beams on multiple occasions. Security guards hired to watch construction sites overnight reported seeing a white figure moving between buildings under construction, always carrying what appeared to be a hatchet or an axe. These sightings occurred in areas where suburban development was pushing deeper into previously undisturbed land. The figure's apparent knowledge of local terrain became a consistent theme across witness accounts from different decades. People described how the white figure could navigate dense woods in complete darkness, moving silently through areas where most people would struggle even with flashlights. The creature seemed to know exactly where paths led and which routes would provide the quickest escape when confronted by witnesses. This familiarity with the landscape suggested either someone who had lived in the area for many years or something that possessed an unusual connection to the natural environment. A jogger running trails through Powhick Bay Regional Park in 1994 spoke of seeing the white figure standing among the trees about 50 yards away from the main path. The encounter occurred during late afternoon when visibility was excellent, eliminating the possibility that shadows or poor lighting had created a misidentification. The jogger described watching the figure for several seconds before it stepped behind a large oak tree and seemed to vanish completely. A thorough search of the area revealed no trace of where the figure might have gone. The accumulation of similar accounts from unconnected sources created a puzzle that defied simple explanation. Witnesses ranged from children to senior citizens, from law enforcement officers to families with no interest in supernatural phenomena. Their descriptions remain remarkably consistent across different time periods, geographic locations, and social backgrounds. The figure always wore white, carried an axe or a hatchet, and demonstrated an intimate knowledge of local forests. These shared details appeared in accounts from people who had never met each other and often lived in different parts of the county, suggesting that their experiences were based on encounters with the same phenomenon rather than shared folklore or suggestion. The persistence of these reports across multiple generations indicated that something had taken root in the collective consciousness of Northern Virginia communities. What began as whispered conversations between neighbors in Clifton gradually spread throughout Northern Virginia, transforming from isolated incident reports into a shared cultural phenomenon that would define the region for generations. The Bunny Man legend took on a life of its own during the late 1970s and early 1980s, moving beyond the original police reports and witness accounts to become part of the local identity. Each family that moved into the expanding suburban developments brought their own questions about the strange stories they heard from longtime residents. By 1973, the legend's rapid transmission among young people had already caught academic attention. High school students discovered the legend through local newspapers and student publications that featured articles about area mysteries and unexplained phenomena. The A-Blast and Orange Peel newspapers provided written accounts that helped standardize certain details while allowing room for creative interpretation. These publications gave the legend a sense of legitimacy that word-of-mouth stories sometimes lacked, creating documentation that future generations could reference and build upon. The internet age transformed how the Bunny Man legend spread and evolved throughout the late 1990s and early 2000s. Timothy C. Forbes posted a version entitled The Clifton Bunny Man on the Castle of Spirits website around 1999, creating what became the most widely circulated written account of the legend. This digital version includes specific details about an escaped convict named Douglas J. Griffin that were later proven false, demonstrating how internet distribution could preserve and distort traditional stories. The speed and reach of online sharing meant that new variations of the legend could emerge and spread faster than ever before. The legend's transformation from local folklore to widespread belief created situations that surprised even researchers studying the phenomenon. A Fairfax County Public Library historian spoke of interviewing a student who approached the library seeking information about a murder that had occurred near her home. The student had heard Bunny Man stories that included increasingly violent details and assumed they represented historical fact rather than evolving folklore. This encounter illustrated how the legend had become so embedded in local consciousness that residents sometimes struggled to distinguish between documented incidents and fictional embellishments. Halloween traditions embraced the Bunny Man legend with enthusiasm that it surprised even longtime residents. The Colchester Overpass became a pilgrimage destination for teenagers and young adults seeking authentic supernatural experiences during October nights. Local authorities began controlling access to the area starting in 2003 as crowds of curious visitors gathered near the overpass during Halloween weekends. In 2011, police established traffic checkpoints that turned away over 200 people attempting to reach the bridge area, demonstrating how the legend had evolved into a significant public safety concern. Families who had lived in the area for multiple generations developed their own traditions around the Bunny Man legend, passing down specific warnings and precautions to children and grandchildren. Parents spoke of teaching their kids to avoid certain wooded areas after dark, not necessarily because they believed in the supernatural aspects of the stories, but because the locations had acquired reputations for attracting dangerous individuals and risky behavior. These family traditions created informal maps of feared locations that influenced how entire neighborhoods thought about their local geography. Real estate agents working in affected areas found themselves addressing the Bunny Man legend with potential home buyers who had researched local folklore before house hunting. Some agents developed standard responses about local history and legends, treating the subject as a curiosity rather than a serious concern. Others reported that certain properties near wooded areas associated with sightings required additional explanation during showing appointments. The legend's influence on property perceptions demonstrated how folklore could affect practical economic decisions within the community. The fear associated with the Bunny Man became woven into the community's collective consciousness in ways that influenced daily behavior and decision-making. Parents adjusted their children's schedules to avoid certain areas during evening hours, joggers and dog walkers modified their routes to stay closer to well-lit residential streets rather than trails that bordered forested land. New housing developments continued pushing into previously undisturbed forest areas throughout the 1990s and 2000s, creating fresh intersection points between human settlement and the wild spaces where encounters had traditionally occurred. The persistence of similar reports across different decades and development phases indicated the legend represented something more substantial than typical folklore that fades as communities change and modernize. Yet despite the accumulated accounts and their remarkable consistency, questions remained about what could actually explain the decades of encounters that had shaped the entire region's relationship with the surrounding wilderness. Professional investigators and skeptics who examined the Bunnyman phenomenon approached the accumulated accounts with systemic determination to find logical explanations that could account for the persistent reports. These researchers brought scientific methodology and criminal investigation experience to bear on a mystery that had resisted simple solutions for decades. Their efforts focused on identifying patterns, inconsistencies, and alternative explanations that could reduce the supernatural claims to more mundane causes. The escaped mental patient theory gained early traction among investigators who noted the timing of the original 1970s incident with changes in the mental health care policies throughout Virginia. However, this explanation faced immediate problems when researchers discovered that no asylum had existed in Fairfax County before 1910, debunking the most widely circulated versions of the legend that claimed inmates had escaped during a 1904 transfer to Lorton Prison. Investigators found no records of any mental health facility transfers that could account for the 1970 encounters, undermining the theories that connected the sightings to institutional patients. Local prankster theories proposed that one or more individuals deliberately created the Bunnyman persona to frighten people, perhaps as teenage pranks that evolved into more elaborate hoaxes over time. Investigators following this reasoning searched for connections between reported sightings and known troublemakers in the community, looking for patterns that might reveal the human identity behind the costume. However, the sustained effort and risk required to maintain such elaborate deceptions across different locations over many years presented significant challenges to this explanation. The consistency of witness accounts across multiple decades suggested either an impossibly dedicated hoaxer or something beyond simple pranks. The hermit or vagrant theory suggested that someone had chosen to live permanently in the forested areas around Fairfax County, surviving through intimidation of people who wandered too close to their territory. This explanation appealed to investigators because it accounted for the figure's apparent intimate knowledge of the local terrain and ability to disappear quickly when confronted. The white costume could both serve as both camouflage and a frightening appearance that would discourage closer investigation. Yet this theory struggled with the figure's apparent agelessness across decades of encounters and the complete absence of any discovered campsites or permanent shelters in areas where sightings occurred. Wildlife misidentification theories attempted to explain some encounters through cases of mistaken identity involving large animals moving through moonlit forests. However, these explanations could not account for the witness description of human speech, deliberate tool use, and purposeful threatening behavior that characterized most Bunnyman encounters. The specific details provided by witnesses, including descriptions of the white suit, rabbit-like head covering, and axe-wielding behavior, made it difficult to attribute these sightings to simple cases of mistaken animal identification. Attempts to connect the sightings with known criminals or disturbed individuals led investigators to examine arrest records and reports of suspicious behavior that coincided with the Bunnyman encounters. They searched for patterns that might link specific incidents to individuals who had both the means and motivation to perpetrate elaborate hoaxes. The investigation process revealed several cases of vandalism and trespassing that occurred near the reported sighting locations, but none showed clear connections to the white figure described by witnesses. Psychological factors provided another avenue for skeptical analysis, with researchers examining how mass hysteria and suggestion might create false memories or influence witness perceptions. The power of folklore itself could shape what people expected to see when visiting locations associated with the legend, potentially causing them to interpret normal sounds and shadows as evidence of supernatural activity. However, the consistency of witness accounts, even among those who had never heard of the legend before their encounters, made it difficult to attribute the sighting solely on psychological factors. Investigator W. L. Johnson, who handled the original 1970 police investigation, closed the case in March 1971 with the official statement that the incidents remain unsubstantiated as to whether there really was a white rabbit. His report found no indications of any earlier stories or criminal incidents involving an individual dressed as a rabbit, suggesting that the October 1970 events represented the genesis of what would become a persistent legend. 5 decades of investigation have produced a remarkable outcome: neither definitive proof nor complete debunking of the Bunnyman phenomenon. Professional investigators, amateur researchers, skeptical journalists, and law enforcement agencies have applied their resources to solving this mystery. Yet the core questions remain as puzzling today as they were in October 1970. The accumulated evidence creates a frustrating paradox where something clearly happened to generate consistent reports over such an extended period. But that something continues to resist conventional explanation or documentation. The physical evidence from those original 1970 incidents remained unexplained despite extensive analysis and investigation. Robert Bennett's damaged car window represented tangible proof that something violent had occurred during his encounter near Guinea Road, while Paul Phillips' construction site bore axe marks cut deep into wooden support beams. The Fairfax County Police Department documented these physical traces in their official report from October 29, 1970. But their investigation ultimately reached no conclusions about who or what had caused the damage. The mystery endures precisely because it occupies a space between proof and disproof that conventional investigation methods cannot easily resolve. After 50 years of accumulated accounts, physical evidence, and failed explanations, the phenomenon continues to challenge our understanding of what constitutes reliable evidence and credible experience. The Bunnyman legend represents something deeper than simple folklore or mass hysteria. 2 documented incidents from October 1970 involved credible witnesses who reported identical details about a figure carrying an axe near Guinea Road. Robert Bennett and Paul Phillips provided consistent descriptions despite never speaking to each other, while physical evidence supported their accounts. Investigator W.L. Johnson closed the official case in March 1971 for lack of evidence. Yet 5 decades of similar reports from reliable sources suggest that something genuine underlies the accumulated stories. Somewhere in the woods near Guinea Road, faint echoes of that first hatchet strike still seem to linger among the trees. This has been Midnight Signals. I'm Russ Chamberlain, guiding you through the shadows where history meets mystery. Until next time, stay vigilant, seek the hidden, and remember, in every silence there is a signal, and in every signal, a story waiting to be told.